Just how important is the idea of sanctuary to our worship of God? Welcome to Probe. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. We are continuing our series focusing on sanctuary themes in the book of Hebrews. My conversation partners again are Pedrito Maynard Reed and Bruce Johansson, both of them New Testament experts, colleagues in the School of Theology at Walla Walla College. What I would like to do today is simply take a quick survey of how people in different eras have worshipped with or without a sanctuary. And then we'll come back and say, well, why is sanctuary so important, Old Testament and New Testament? So here's just some quick thumbnail sketches. Before sin, there was no sanctuary. Adam and Eve simply had face-to-face with God. No barriers. The patriarchs, they offered sacrifices, but there was no sanctuary. Then finally you come to the sanctuary in the wilderness. And we'll want to come back to that one because this is when God first gives a sanctuary to his people. But then you go into the period of the judges and the early kings. If you read the historical narratives, it's quite clear that the bits and pieces that were there in the wilderness were scattered all over the place. 2 Chronicles 1:2-6, for example, indicates that the ark was in Jerusalem, but the altar of burnt offering was up in Gibeon, and the tent was there. So the sanctuary was fragmented at that particular point. And then finally, Solomon builds the temple. But then you go into exile. Again, you're in a foreign land. No sanctuary. Come back and build a puny little temple. And the people rejoice if they hadn't seen a temple before, and wept greatly if they had seen a great temple before. Then you come to Herod's temple. Finally, AD 70, the temple is wiped out, and there's no temple except in heaven. And then this amazing verse in Revelation 21 says in the new earth, there's no temple there.
Mm-hmm. God is the temple.
God is the temple, yeah. So what in the world do we make of sanctuary? Is it helpful? Is it necessary? Is it expendable? Because it is a key theme in the book of Hebrews. The author of Hebrews is very keen on sanctuary.
And in fact, it's called the book of to the Hebrews because of the sanctuary.
Because of the sanctuary.
All the way through. Christ as priest and sacrifice and all of that. I would like to try out, I believe really in progressive revelation. I think God reveals things when he thinks it's the right time. And he meets people where they are at, you know. For me, the initial giving of the sanctuary during the wandering in the wilderness, the Israelites had just come out of Egypt. They had spent a good long time there, and had learned a lot of pagan sorts of things. And I'm wondering if the sanctuary, you know, with all the barriers, and then the most holy place, wasn't there to emphasize for them the holiness of God. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, the mercy seat was the throne of God, and the Shekinah that came down over the sanctuary emphasized his presence, mm-hmm. his care for his people. He wanted to be with them, but at the same time, he was very holy and mm-hmm. not to be taken lightly. I don't know if there was an instructive thing for them at that time. I think so.
So when the sanctuary is used, when God brings in sanctuary, it seems to me that it's not necessarily the ideal. Hmm. It's because he wants to capture something more. Now, and this sounds almost heretical because we spend so much time in the place of worship, even today. Our focus, we put most of our money in there. We talk about how you act in there. And it is most important. And yet, as you look at what you just went through, guided us through all that, it seems that God's ideal is always when there is no sanctuary. And I'm big into back to Eden. I'm always saying, I want to go back to the ideal, not the non-ideal like Genesis 3. I want to go to the Genesis 1 and 2. And I see before sin, there is no sanctuary. You know, I see during the patriarch's time, which is an idealist time, mm-hmm. before the Exodus, there is no sanctuary.
And you have some amazing personal context.
Tremendous. Yes. Yes. The closer the contact with God is so close, there's no sanctuary. Yeah. Jesus, then you come down. I mean, even during the exile period, which is an interesting time for the development of worship without a sanctuary, where they really had to try to mm-hmm. find God in their special way. But then you come to the time of Jesus. And as a matter of fact, he and Stephen kind of wipe this away. And then you come to the new earth again. Should we say that it would be best if we get rid of our churches? And if we have our churches, it's because we are in a weak state of wanderings, and because we are so far from God, maybe house churches like the early church, they didn't have a sanctuary, but they had a fellowship that was tremendous, a close relation with God. These big temples are not what God ideal is for us.
There's an amazing verse, Federico, on Jeremiah 3:16 to show how easy it is for important symbols that seem to be crucial, mm-hmm. God's worship, can become a snare.
Yes. Exactly.
Jeremiah 3:16 talks about a future restored state. And it says there in 3:16, "And when you have multiplied and increased in the land in those days, says the Lord, they shall no longer say, 'The ark of the covenant of the Lord.' It shall not come to mind or be remembered or missed, nor shall another one be made."
Yeah. Wow.
That's talking about the ark.
Yeah.
The repository of the Ten Commandments. But the prophet is so angry with the way people have abused that. Says, when you get to the new earth, nothing like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'd like to pick up on something that Pedrito has said here. It's most interesting when you look at Stephen's sermon in Acts. I don't know if that was
what you were talking about. Yes, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah. He can go through the whole salvation history of mm-hmm. Israel and point out to his Jewish opponents that all the times that God has been faithful and they have been unfaithful, he can go, and they have to nod their heads and say, yeah, that's true. At the end of the whole thing, he attacks the temple.
He really does.
And he pays for it with his life.
That's exactly right.
Now that's in Acts chapter 7.
Acts chapter 7. I look as I travel even around the world, and I know that as we go to these other countries that don't have much, one of the first things we want to do is to build them a church. And I sometimes ask myself the question, if some of the people that are worshiping under the tree have a closer relationship with God and community than some who, after they got institutionalized in a building, the fights really start. The position, the jockeying for power starts. God becomes a central focus and community when there's not the building. I'm not saying we're not supposed to have the building. I'm saying it doesn't have its importance. But I wonder if it does something to our relationship with God.
Well, there has to be a creative tension there, because for a community to say, I'm going to use all my money, we can worship under the tree, but I'm going to use all my money for my own personal stuff. There's something wrong with that as well.
Yes.
That's why you'll often find people, especially in smallish communities, say, our church is going to be better than any of our homes.
Yeah.
Because it's so terribly important to us.
But if we can get to the point, and this is what is the point of sanctuary? Mm-hmm. It's the point of the sanctuary is not the building and even the things that are in the mm-hmm. building. They are metaphors for a relationship.
Okay.
Right? And that's what we want to get. So we're not throwing out sanctuary. We're not throwing out sanctuary language. But God sometimes has to use these things as to draw us closer to Him. And like children, we use toys and we use artifacts to get mm-hmm. to a larger point. So I still like the sanctuary idea. I still like the sanctuary buildings and all the things in there. But I want to move beyond the architecture.
Yeah. It's an age-old tension between form and substance.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have form to mediate substance. But very often, us human beings make the form the final end in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the substance gets lost.
And thus we get into these big discussions. is there a real sanctuary in heaven, with the measurements and all of that? I'm not saying there is not. Of course, reality is way beyond what we call reality. But if we can get to what is...
The function
behind those images.
But you see, almost... Well, I don't know that I agree with this, but I remember reading a scholar once who said that without pictures, we can't think at all. And so when we try to picture what's happening in heaven, probably more sophisticated people would be able to recognize, well, those are just pictures. Probably ordinary people, starting with children and others who think very concretely, they would be very devastated if you said my pictures aren't correct.
That's right.
So we have to be very careful with them.
And I still picture heaven with the sanctuary the way I grew up picturing it. You know, of course, when I got to university and I realized that some of the pictures I had as a kid of the sanctuary is quite different from what it was originally, at least portrayed in the Bible, I still haven't changed my picture because that's the one I grew up with. And I'm very comfortable having God in that corner, you know, and Jesus over here, and he's doing that. And I have a lovely picture of God. But I know academically that it's bigger than that. But I don't take it away from me, okay?
I remember how surprised I was when I all of a sudden it dawned to me that the record keeping in heaven was a picture adapted to my understanding.
That's right.
For example, fun to ask the saints, you know, who've grown up with these pictures, when we see pictures of the record keeping, what do the angels usually have in hand?
A quill.
A quill pen. Where did God get the turkeys in heaven?
I love that.
But the point is quite clear. Whether you've got computers
there are
records, you see, and that's, I think, what we need
that's
to say.
Right.
Now, one other question in connection with this is really quite intriguing. God's throne. If we have pictures, there are a number of passages in Scripture that suggest that God's throne is in the sanctuary.
Yeah.
But with all these changing pictures of sanctuary, what do you suppose we're to make of that? For instance, Isaiah 6:1 is a good example from the Old Testament. This marvelous picture of glory.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that? Is it... is it safe to say that God's
throne? The hem of his robe fills the temple.
It fills the temple.
So evidently there weren't these divisions that we had down here in the earthly temple because he's sitting on the throne and his robe fills the temple.
And don't we come boldly before his throne?
Of grace.
Of grace. It's fascinating to discuss, but then we just have to come to me right back down to say God is bigger than any of the pythons.
Actually, if we look at the parallels between sanctuary and heaven, the mercy seat is God's throne. That word hilasterion is mentioned twice in the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 9, of the actual mercy seat in the in the earthly temple. The same word is applied to Jesus Christ in Romans 3.
Isn't that something?
He is the mercy seat, we translate it expiation or something else like that.
Now, bringing things together, we have just a few more minutes this time. What do you suppose, why is sanctuary and in what way is sanctuary so important in the book of Hebrews? What does this do? The sanctuary is gone. The earthly sanctuary is gone. But he's still talking to people who knew about that sanctuary.
Yes. I think that the whole idea of mediation, or connection, I should say, rather, with God, is mediated in Jewish forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what this author is trying to show is that Jesus provides a better connection.
That's right.
In fact, the word superior, repeats throughout the whole book.
That's exactly right.
It's better, better, better. Better covenant, better hope, better sacrifice, better priesthood.
Every discussion has to focus on that. That's the bottom line.
And that's, of course, the punchline. In one sentence, Jesus is the better one.
That's right. Absolutely.
Thank you, Pedrito and Bruce. Next week, we're going to talk about covenant, Jesus and the covenant. My thanks to Brian Bastonet and to Steve Cochran, our program engineers, and to all of you for listening in for Probe. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.